East Coast FM's Mind Yourself.
It's that time of the week where we focus on our mental health, and today we're joined by All-Ireland winning Clare hurler Tony Griffin. And for the last decade, Tony has been working with teenagers, listening to them and their experiences. And Tony is here to tell us about his book, which is called The Teenager's Book of Life. Morning, Tony.
Morning, Declan. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Good to talk to you. Fascinating book to get inside the minds of teenagers as well. How did it all come about?
Well, I was very fortunate in that I worked for, you know, every decade in a human being's life, I think, is challenging for different reasons, but particularly that decade, our teenage years can be extremely challenging, and even more so now, I think. So I was fortunate, Declan. I spent 10 years working in schools with teenagers, listening to them, as you said there. And it was all inspired by the work of Jim Steins down in Melbourne. So I studied what he did, and a group of us brought it back to Ireland. So I had listened to so many stories, and I often said to myself, I wish parents could hear how eloquent these teenagers are, how much they have to say. So on the other side, I'd have all these parents saying, I wish I could get through to my teenagers. So I just said, what if I wrote something that kind of brought them together, kind of almost in a way translated some of what it's like to be a teenager for parents, and also talked to teenagers and said, look, here's some of the things you need to know, but you just might not be hearing it. And here it is, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. In a way to kind of help them find their way.
And how did you get inside their heads? How did you earn the trust? In fact, how did you earn the credibility to actually hear the stories and be trusted to actually, be told the story?
Yeah, it's a good question, because like at the very start when I went into schools, I realized that, you know, I was trying to do what most really well-intentioned adults do, and I was trying to just tell them all the things they needed to hear, but I could just sense it wasn't landing. And then one day I said, I just kind of, you know, threw my own toys out of the pram with like 50 teenagers, 16-year-olds. I said, guys, how do I talk to you so you'll actually talk back to me? Not like I'm an adult to the teacher or anyone else, because I'm none of those things, but just as another human being. And they said, well, who are you? And I started telling them, you know, I'm engaged, I'm this, I'm a hurler. And they said, yeah, no, that's all the stuff you do. Like, but who really are you? So I actually told them about a breakdown I'd had after a year-long period of grief after my father died in 2008. I just told them about that experience, you know, and I was very, you know, open about it. And all of a sudden, the phones went away, the hoodies went back, and they said, okay, this is how you talk to us. We want you to talk to us like we're adults, like we're like you. And that broke down the barriers. So I learned then that they want to be talked at in a way that's almost a few years above where we think they are, and they want to be taken seriously. And so that's how I found after years how to connect with them. And then obviously we built programs that help that, you know, we built content into our programs. But I was so fortunate, because as you say that, I'm thinking about a girl, she was 16, her best friend, who was a boy, had just taken his own life a few weeks before, and she came up to me in the middle of the workshop and said, look, we need to talk about it. So workshop starts after the break, she starts talking about her friend, and one of the teachers said, look, I don't think this is the place. And she kind of got really, you know, irate and said, well, where is the place? All of you adults don't want to talk to us about this. And I said to her, why do you think adults are afraid to talk to you about stuff like that, like really serious life issues? And she just looked me dead straight in the eye and she said, because they're afraid of what we'll say. And I said, well, I'm not. And I said, well, I am actually a little bit, but go on, you have the floor. And I learned a big lesson that day, not to sugarcoat things. Also, that's kind of what they're looking for. They're at that stage where they're starting to realize they're not children anymore, but they're not adults, so they don't have the same freedoms adults have to perhaps do the things they want to do. So there's a lot of frustration there, there's a lot of anger there, there's a lot of sometimes disillusionment there. And they're just like us. They're trying to make sense of what it is to be alive. And when I had that type of conversation with them, I learned more than anyone.
Yeah. I mean, having got that trust and, as I say, that credibility that you are okay to be listened to and talked to, there might have been a temptation on your side to ingratiate yourself in some way in there. Was that there?
Yeah, not really, like, because I knew I wasn't their teacher. Like, I'd go in and run and the organization I worked with, SOAR, which brought the work of Jim Steins that he did in Australia. Like for some Irish people have heard of Jim Steins, many haven't, but like the
from
work
Dublin,
he did in
yeah.
Aussie Rules. Yeah, exactly. And he was a star down there. Like they have a statue in Melbourne to him. But the thing that most people don't know is the thousands of young people's lives he influenced positively. So I learned a lot of their techniques, but I learned that if I was myself with those teenagers, and that might mean, guys, I don't know really what, I know, you know, I had so many girls or boys stand up and say, look, my thing I'm most afraid of is that I self-harm myself or I miss my granddad. Like so many people, it's amazing, so many, Declan would say, their best friend was their granddad or grandmother and they'd miss them so much. Like I remember this one fella, he was talking about how he used to go around to his granddad who had pigeons and his granddad would explain all the different pigeons, what their gifts were. And he'd say to the son, you've gifts, you know, you're a grandson that no one else has. And the grandson would tell him about the girl he fancies in school. But he'd never talk to his parents that way. And I said, why wouldn't your parents talk to you that way? Or why wouldn't you trust them? And he goes, you know, my granddad just doesn't judge me. Like, and he knows what it's like to be a teenager. And I said, well, so do your parents. They just may have forgotten. So I always just found if I was ever being fake, they'd tell me so. So the more I was myself, warts and all, and just was curious, yeah. I asked them the questions. Like, I'm no expert. I was just very curious about what does it feel like to be a teenager today? Because I remember when I was a teenager, if it wasn't for hurling, I don't think I'd be here. Because hurling, off the hurling field, I felt weak and, you know, I didn't like how I looked. I felt ugly. But when I went onto the hurling pitch, I felt like I was good at one thing. And that kind of got me through those years.
And did you mostly listen? You said, you know, they liked the fact that you weren't judging. Did you mostly listen or did you take things away? Did you act on anything? Did you offer advice when was required? How did you continue to have the ongoing conversation with those teenagers that you were dealing with?
Yeah, so I was fortunate that, you know, I was there on behalf of an organization that we had built and I was training other facilitators to go in and run these programs. And we were sourcing people from all over the world to come to Ireland, experts in their field, to train our facilitators to send them into these schools. And all we were doing was holding a kind of a container for young people to talk about their lives in a way where even in front of another 100 in their class, they take off their mask for a little while. So, you know, the girl or the guy who seemed to have it all, when they talk about how they actually feel about themselves or things in their life that aren't perfect, people would see them differently for the first time. So we would run an introductory program for half a day and then we'd invite young people to come to some of our out of school programs. Now that was where the ones that wanted to would you know, find a way to work with SOAR. We had a waiting list for work experience the length of both our arms, you know, because they wanted to learn more about themselves. And we have a brilliant school system when it comes to educating intellectually our young people's potential, but we're not where we need to be on how we educate the rest of them, who they are as people, as, you know. But the interesting thing about working with teenagers is sometimes all they need is just to feel like they need insight or they need understanding of what's going on. And then they're really well resourced. I always say this to parents when they say, I'm worried about my son or daughter. And if they're not at the at-risk end of the spectrum, you know, if they're not at the self-harming risk or, you know, the eating disorder, if they're not there, because that's when the adult steps in. But if they're not at that extent, then trust them to find their own way. You don't need to necessarily go in and fix it for them. Like, I had a mother this week call me and say, look, I'm divorcing from my husband. And my 14-year-old boy, he's always been like my best friend, but now he's angry and he's pulling away from me. And I said, yeah, that's what he's supposed to do when he's 14. He's starting to pull away from man and find his own way. And if there's a little bit of anger about the fact that the divorce is there, that's normal, okay? So whether she was really, really concerned that something bad was going to happen. But I often say to parents, I'm no parent to teenagers. I have two small boys, 6 years and 11 months. But trust them. They're much wiser than we give them credit for. We were much wiser than our parents give us credit for at that age.
Yeah. And, you know, when you hear teenagers today, I mean, it's all different. We didn't have, you know, the social media before. They have their games that they play electronically. We didn't have. And teenagers are just different today. I mean, looking back to your teenage years and what you know about that and probably observing things over the years. Are teenagers much different today?
Well, our parents or our grandparents would probably have said the same about teenagers in 1930 or 1940. Are they different today? You know, it is a part of how we view them. And a big part of that is because we forget as we move into the other years of our life what it was like to be that age. And are they different today? I'd say what they're experiencing internally in their hearts and their souls, very similar. When I look back to myself as a teenager, I was self-conscious a lot of the time. I was tall and skinny. I was, you know, there were things going on at home like there are in any family that worried me. And I was nervous about what people thought of me. Now, if you went out and asked a teenager today or like the 40,000 I spoke to over a decade, they're experiencing the same internal world that I did or you did. Now, there are other things that are different. You know, you consider at that age, Declan, when you're in your teenage years, your friends are your tribe that you make sense of life with. And at the moment, over the last few years, teenagers haven't had that. You know, parents can maybe jump in the car, observe the 5K limit or whatever it might be, and see a friend for a coffee. Whereas teenagers, it's harder. So they're, in a way, losing out on seeing the group of people that mean the most to them for that period of their life. But they are incredibly resilient. Social media has changed the game so fundamentally. And there's some brilliant things about social media, and there's some, like everything, every gift has its curse. And one of the gifts of social media is it connects us, obviously. But one of the curses for teenagers is multi-billion dollar companies are trying to get them to feel a certain way so they'll buy their product. And they want them to be all the same and look the same. And that's a challenge for young people because perhaps they look at someone's social media and say, their life is perfect, mine isn't. When in actual fact, a lot of money and time has gone into making the picture look a certain way. So, you know, that's why I think it's important that adults and teenagers, and that's what the book is doing, which I never really expected for the book to connect teenagers and their parents or grandparents in the way it has. It's creating conversation about things like life, death, that I write about in the book, friendships, pain, hard times, and it's connecting people across the ages. And that's what I suppose why I wrote it. I just didn't know that's why I was writing it.
What about stimulants? I mean, back in my day, you get into trouble for getting what we used to call locked, you know, with too much drink and all that sort of
that
stuff.
Was my day, too.
You know, you'd imagine today that it would be a relief if teenagers got drunk on alcohol rather than take pretty dangerous substances that could be circulating.
Yeah, completely. Like, you know, if you... We've all had connection to someone in our family or in our friendships that have some form of an addiction. And it's at that younger age, very often a lot of young people are looking for either a thrill, so they're just looking for that buzz of life, or they're looking to escape some pain they're in. And when it's the latter, when it's pain, obviously stimulants, wherever that might be, wherever the drug of choice is, it's one way to escape that. It's obviously not the answer. So for, you know, I was fortunate, as I said earlier, hurling meant that getting locked for me was a liability. So I wasn't pulled down that road. But I've worked with a lot of young kids, teenagers. I'm thinking one guy in particular who was like at 16, no father figure. And he ended up just being a runner for a gang. And we had to get him out of that environment, get him away, get him a change of schools because he wouldn't have been alive otherwise. So it's a difficult, difficult thing. And my heart goes out to a mum or dad listening to this who they know there's someone calling the door to collect a debt. And I don't have the silver bullet answer. I wish I had. I don't think any of us have. But I think as a society, do you know there's a saying in it's one of the African proverbs that if it's said about boys, but I think it relates to boys and girls. If the young boys don't feel the warmth of the village, they'll burn it down to feel it. And it basically means that we need to, I suppose, begin to love our young people just a bit more than maybe we have. A lot of them feel that they're not seen or heard or respected by adults, that they're misunderstood. And it's hard to talk to teenagers. As I said earlier, it took me maybe 2 years before I learned how to do it. And then the next 8, trying to do it on a consistent basis and getting it wrong a lot. That's why the book, I didn't realize it would help parents and teenagers have the conversations that maybe they both want to have but don't know how to have. It's that kind of roadmap or guide. And if it does that and a conversation begins, well, then who knows where that will go.
Indeed. Tony, a famed hurler, of course, an all-star and star of County Clare, done well in your career on that. Just wanted to ask you, though, the connection with Canada, because I was reading something recently about you that you commuted from Canada over to play hurling, but yet you went to Canada for a very special reason.
Yeah. My father used to say, a boy in love feels no cold. And yeah, I think that could be extended to talk about a boy in love or hurling feels even less, makes no sense and feels no cold. So, yeah, I was in a very safe, solid job. Someone who became a real guide in my life. He was our team doctor with Clare. He once said to me, are you happy with where you're at? And I said, well, no, I'm not happy in this job. Some mornings I cry myself on the way to it. And he said, okay, you need to change, because if nothing changes, nothing changes. So he challenged me to check out this university in a place called Nova Scotia. And I never even heard of it. And I got in and I just decided, I asked my dad, do you think I should do it? And he said, if you don't do it now, you never will. I had a very understanding hurling manager in Anthony Daly who said, you know, Griff, we'll help you make this happen. So I enrolled as a 23-year-old in college over there. So that meant I needed to commute every 3 weeks to play with Clare. And I train on my own over there. You know, people thought I was crazy running around with a big stick in my hand. I'd be running down the street deck and then people would recoil seeing me coming. They'd think they were being mugged. And I'd be out for a jog to try and stay fit. And then I'd come back and play for the summers. And when my dad died from asbestosis, he was a builder, I didn't get back in time. And that really sent me into a bit of a dark place. I ended up cycling a bicycle from one side of Canada to the other to try and raise money in his memory. And it was a result of that, I suppose, that I started to find my love for meeting people. I met Irish people every single day, the whole way across Canada. These people would be dying or they'd be in remission from cancer. And they'd just spend a few hours with me. They'd cry. We'd laugh. Usually I'd be the person they'd tell things they'd never told them to. I was a stranger passing through town, but it informed a lot of what I've come to realize, that we're all on the same journey. Might be different in certain ways, but we're all feeling and having the same experiences. And the more we can maybe talk about that, the less alone we'll all feel. And that includes teenagers and adults.
Tony, thanks for the chat this morning. It was just nice to have the chat. Almost forgot where we were, like on the radio and things. It's just nice to share your thoughts. Tony's book, it's Tony Griffin. His book is called The Teenager's Book of Life. Great to talk to you, Tony. Love to talk again sometime.